Thank you very much. Good evening. First, let me thank Pastor Gillison for his leadership and for opening Mount Olive Baptist Church for this forum this evening. Let's give Pastor Gillison another round of applause. I also want to thank the Concerned Clergy Coalition of Western New York for co-sponsoring this forum with my administration and for their leadership on these issues as residents have expressed concern throughout the city of Buffalo. Let's give the Concerned Clergy Coalition a round of applause. I'm going to be very brief with a few points with the ground rules for tonight's forum, and then we want to hear from you. What this meeting is about is listening to the community and incorporating your concerns, your ideas, your thoughts into our process of reviewing and updating our policing policies, procedures, and training in the city of Buffalo. Clearly, the events in Ferguson, Missouri, and Staten Island, New York, have opened an important national dialogue across the country about policing policy, procedures, and training. We in Buffalo deeply share that concern. Since 2006, I've focused my administration on two equally important goals: to keep neighborhoods safe and to create mutual respect, that every citizen be treated with respect and that the police be treated with respect who do difficult and dangerous jobs to keep our communities safe. We take this very seriously, and we look forward to a thoughtful conversation. Here's how the forum will work. After a few brief opening statements, we want to hear from you. We want to hear your concerns about policing issues, the ideas that you have, and if you've had experiences with policing that haven't been good ones, we want to hear that as well. Please know that we are consistently reviewing and upgrading our policy, procedures, and training. It didn't just start as a result of recent national events. Our police department has made a number of reforms in recent years. Tonight you'll hear some of them, but really we are here to listen to you. Feedback from this meeting will be incorporated into the upcoming training programs and reforms that we expect to take place in the Buffalo Police Department. Tonight, we ask for your cooperation. We want this to be a meaningful dialogue that results in positive change on the city's website. So out of this forum, the answers, the questions, the responses will be posted on the city's website for those of you who are here and those who were not able to get here to be able to see the answers to those questions in a very transparent way. If you don't want your question asked publicly, simply check the indicator box on the index card. Also, know that you can always direct questions after tonight to the district police chief at one of the various district police stations, and we will introduce them in a moment. Now, every single question that you have is important to us, and every single question, all of your input, will help us drive the kind of change that this community is looking for. Also, if you want to follow up with a question and you're not able to do that tonight, please go to www.311@city-buffalo.com. Now, let me conclude by saying I appreciate this gathering, and I appreciate each and every one of you taking the time and thinking that this is serious enough for you to be here tonight. We look forward to the conversation to come and the results that we will achieve collectively together. Now, let me just quickly introduce those who are here on the panel. The introductions will not be made in any particular order. And when you are introduced, please raise your hand so that the members of the community and the audience know who you are. Buffalo Police Commissioner Daniel Durenda. Deputy Police Commissioner, First Deputy Police Commissioner Byron Lockwood. Deputy Police Commissioner Kimberly Beatty. Inspector Harold McClellan of the Internal Affairs Division. William Hochul, the United States Attorney for the Western District of New York. Brian Botig, the Special Agent in Charge of the FBI Buffalo Office. James Barnese, the Erie County District Attorney's Office Homicide Bureau. Mark Whipperman, the Undersheriff in the Erie County Sheriff's Department. Chief George Gast of the NFTA Police. Reverend Kenneth A. Simmons, who is Chair of the Commission on Citizens' Rights and Community Relations. Reverend Sheila Wallace, Commission on Citizen Rights and Community Relations Police Oversight Committee. Reverend James Giles, Peacemakers. Reverend Mark Blue, President of the Baptist Ministers Alliance. Reverend Carrie Beckwith, President of the African American Methodist Ministers Alliance. And two youth representatives, Tatiana Nelson, who is active with the NAACP, and Lamone Gibson, who is active with the Peacemakers. Let's give them a round of applause. And I just want to very quickly introduce some of the elected officials who are with us. I want to recognize the majority leader of the Buffalo City Council and Maston District Council member, Damone Smith. The Niagara District Council member, David Rivera. And the University District Council member, Rashid Wyatt. I also want to recognize members of our Buffalo Board of Education, Dr. Barbara Seals-Nevergold, Board Member Mary Ruth Kapsiak, and Board Member Dr. Teresa Harris-Tigg. And I want to introduce the chiefs of the various police districts who are with us. Anthony Barba of the D District. Kevin Brinkworth of the school and school safety and security. Carmen Menza of the E District. Thomas Moran of the A District. Brian Patterson of the B District. Chief Dennis J. Richards of the Investigative Services and Detective Division. And Chief Aaron Young of C District. I also want to introduce two of the administrators that work in Commissioner Durenda's office, Lieutenant Steve Nichols, who is the Community Affairs Officer, and Lieutenant Dan Rinaldo, who is also in... Lieutenant Jeff Rinaldo. He also has a brother in the police department. And I want to recognize the minority leader of the Erie County Legislature, Legislator Betty Jean Grant, who is with us as well. And now with that, we are going to go to the first question.
Mayor, we want to remind everyone they're setting up seats upstairs, so we cannot block the exit going, the egress going upstairs, so you cannot block the stairs. So there are chairs upstairs, and there are chairs still over here. Just as a safety concern. All right, the first question. And yes, those who have cards, please fill out your card. Please, we want to make sure that we get to everybody's concerns. If you don't have a card, we'll get you a card. Okay, Crystal, Executive Director.
Thank you, Az.
The first question comes from well-known teacher and community activist Eva Doyle. The community centers need to be open later to accommodate our youth who need positive places to go in the evening. Why aren't they open longer? Will you involve the schools in your plans? How and when?
Good evening, Mother Doyle. Mic is not on.
Good evening, Mother Doyle, wherever you are. I actually run three community centers here in the city of Buffalo, the JFK Community Center, the Pratt Willard Community Center, and the Edward A. Saunders Community Center. And our doors open up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and my staff, Rashawn Krull and Kevin McCauley and Herbert Willis, they're there till 10:30, 11 o'clock at night on their own time. So you have a few community centers in the city of Buffalo that are not open, but I know that the community centers ran by the Community Action Organization of Erie County, they are open. And to ensure that they stay open to a good enough hour where our kids can be tired enough to go home, Pastor Giles graciously enough sends the snug workers out to help keep order in our community centers after hours. So if there are some children that want to have extracurricular activities before curfew time, you're welcome to come to our centers. We have everything from GED programs all the way to basketball, cooking, self-help. We even bring in Brother Nate Boyd on to do self-defense classes for our youth, young adults, and seniors. So if your children would like to go to a community center that's after hours, it's no cost, no registration fee, feel free to come to the Community Action Organization Centers, the Pratt Willard Community Center at 422 Pratt Street, 118 Hickory is the JFK Center, and 2777 Bailey Avenue is the Edward A. Saunders Community Center. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Our next question is an anonymous question. Why don't the police walk the beat on the streets so people, old and young, get to know them in their neighborhood? Back in the day, we knew the police officers that worked in our neighborhood, and so did the children. Today, we have come up, and they don't see any police officers.
Good evening. I want to thank Pastor Gillison for hosting this event. We really appreciate you having us in your house today, and it's very, very much appreciated. As far as foot patrols in the city of Buffalo, we do have foot patrols on different business districts. Bit different, like with Christmas season coming, we have our officers walking. We mandate our officers in every district whenever they can to do park and walks, so they are out there. We can always do more. We're looking at it, but we will be out there, and you will see walking patrols, and I believe you have. Again, maybe some people haven't. We'll try to step them up a little bit.
Talk about what neighborhoods, Commissioner.
We have it in all five districts, A through E. We mandate the chiefs to have their officers, when they can, get out of the patrol cars and walk. We have special details. We have canine details. And again, it's in all five districts throughout the city. Again, if you have not seen them, they are out there. We are looking to increase the patrols. In the winter, there's less foot patrols, but during the summer months, you'll see more in the parks and different areas. We do mandate it.
Thank you, Commissioner.
If you have a cell phone, would you please silence your cell phone, put it on vibrate? Thank you very much.
Our next question. What is the process for people to report bad behavior by police officers? To whom should they go? What is the follow-up? What is the process? And how can the community evaluate the integrity of this process?
I'll start the question, and I'll bring Inspector McCullen in from Internal Affairs. There's several ways that you can report a complaint on police. You can go to any district house. You can go to Buffalo Police Headquarters. In 2010, I think it was July of 2010, we opened up a satellite office inside of City Hall. Because if people aren't comfortable coming to the districts or to headquarters, it gave them another option to report any misconduct. IAD will make accommodations. If you call, there's on a website, there's a number. They'll come and see you if you're not comfortable coming into any of the buildings, including City Hall. So there's a number on a website. You can call either IAD or you can call any district and ask for a supervisor to file a complaint. As I said, on the City of Buffalo website, there's a form. You can call 311 and a complaint will come to me. As far as you can send a letter, and I've gotten numerous letters with complaints that we turn over to Internal Affairs. Other ways we have received complaints, people have gone to the U.S. Attorney's Office, to the District Attorney's Office, to the FBI. We work closely with each one of them to answer these complaints. Now, Inspector Harry McCullen.
Okay, as far as the investigation process, I'm in charge of the Internal Affairs Office. I will review the complaints as they come in. I'm one of my investigators, who are lieutenants. I will review the complaint when it comes in. I will assign it to one of my investigators. I have four lieutenant investigators assigned to the office. They will do a thorough job collecting all the facts, talking to as many witnesses as possible. They will go out to the areas where the complaint may have taken place and knock on doors and talk to neighbors or business owners and see if anyone saw anything or heard anything. Once we gather all the facts and it's time to close and review the case, we meet every 2 weeks with the police commissioner and we review our closed cases with him, and a determination is made on how to proceed with the information we have.
And we'll get to it. We'll get to it.
Can you get him a
card?
Yeah,
we'll get to it, and we'll give you your opportunity.
I want to reiterate that if you have a question and you need a yellow card, raise your hand. We have staff that will be bringing them to you right now and also collecting them.
There's also another alternative if you don't feel safe or comfortable calling the Buffalo Police Department. There's an office in City Hall. It's the Commission on Citizens' Rights and Community Relations. That department I happen to chair, and Crystal Rodriguez is the executive director. Now, if you have a police complaint, you can actually call 851-8001 and ask for Crystal directly. And we handle everything from discrimination to police complaints or brutality. As a matter of fact, the film footage that was given news that came from our office, and we have a direct link, and we have a great working relationship with the Internal Affairs Department. So if you don't feel comfortable, you can come to the Edward Saunders Center to see me, or you can call Crystal, and I guarantee you'll get some results. A lot of people don't know about it, because when you have an issue with the Buffalo Police, we don't just get on the news and say, Coach Montana had a problem with the Buffalo Police, because that's his business, and we don't want people to become a target of anybody that, is not feeling comfortable with the statements that they made. But it's confidential. You can call Crystal, and we have got great results.
Thank you, Reverend Simmons. Our next question. I work with the youth in this community, including juvenile delinquents. Many report troubling interactions with the Buffalo Police. What is being done in order to educate our youth about police interactions, and who is policing the police who take advantage of the youth ignorance?
Can you repeat that question?
Sure, I can. This person is anonymous. And they said that they work with the youth in this community, including juvenile delinquents. Many youth report troubling interactions with the Buffalo Police. What is being done in order to educate the youth about police interactions, and who is policing the police who take advantage of the youth's ignorance?
I will be answering the first part of the question as far as the education goes for the youth. Right now, the NAACP, the Buffalo chapter, along with the national, is working on an information tool that basically educates our youth on interaction with the police. What to do when you're arrested, well, once you have any type of interaction, really, with the police, if you were to be pulled over or it came to a situation where they were trying to detain you, if there is an information tool that's being developed to pretty much educate you on what to do. You can't be expected to do something if you do not know what to do.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Otis T. Barker, Senior Deputy Commissioner for Community Services and Recreation Programming. And I also oversee the Division for Youth for the City of Buffalo. We do have a number of programs as well that the kids have an opportunity to learn more about crimes, things like that, and then also what the consequences are, and then also with police relations. They are our anti-crime program and the code of conduct program. Free to the City of Buffalo, anyone, any organization that may want to have one of the workshops at their center, at their church, please give us a call at 851-5177. Again, that number is 851-5177. And then we also have the Game Changers program, where we actually have police officers at every event that we do with the youth every Friday night, where we open up two of the centers in the City of Buffalo and give the kids an opportunity to actually work with Say Yes to Education, as well as basketball skills, and then they also interact with the police.
Okay. Deputy Commissioner Beattie.
Hello, everyone. Just so you know, our community police officers that work at all of our districts under the direction of their chiefs. Can you hear me? Okay. All right, can you hear me now? Okay, our community police officers, we have two assigned to each district. Those officers are trained, and they are available to talk to you and your community groups and your youth groups on what to do when stopped by the police. If you want to have that training for your block club, your youth group, your church group, whatever the group might be, I train them so I know they know what to do. You can contact our chiefs at the districts, and they'll be available to help you with that. And you actually do the training with law enforcement, so I think that's the way to go.
In terms of how are our youth being educated, between the Stop the Violence Coalition, Buffalo United Front, and No More Tears, and the Fathers, and Mad Dads, and Back to Basics, who formed the Buffalo Peacemakers, we deal with about 250 to 300 youth, and that's not including the youth that we address inside the schools. We are educating. In fact, Frank Messiah from the NAACP brought us down pamphlets to teach them what to do if a law enforcement officer approaches them. We teach them. We go over this information time and time again, because very often officers may not intend to arrest an individual. They may just intend to question an individual, but because of their mouth, it leads to something else further. And we make sure that we go over this kind of information with those individuals. So,
all right, so we're next going to go to Reverend Mark Blue, and then we're going to come to our school board member. So folks, come on. We have to stay together on this. We are responding to the questions that people have. All right, folks, listen, we have to stay together. We're answering the questions people have given us. We are answering the questions people have written out.
All right, all right. So what we're going
to
do...
All right, folks, we're going to have to calm ourselves. We are going to have to calm ourselves down.
My brother, if you...
This is a community meeting to listen to everybody's question. All right, folks, we know that emotions are high. We're going to stay together. We're not asking anybody to leave. We know that people want to get their issues out. We're going to get to every issue. We will get to your issue.
All right. Mayor, I have a quick question from somebody in the audience regarding civilian oversight. Mayor, real quick.
Sir, it's pretty...
All right, Mayor, I have a quick question regarding civilian oversight. Why is there no civilian oversight of police policy conducts? Aren't police supposed to be serving citizens? Related to this, isn't it the mission of Buffalo Police to serve and protect? It's on their website, to enhance the quality of life. Why does it seem like this is happening? Commissioner?
Part of the, if I could try to answer this question, part of the job of the Commission on Citizens' Rights is sort of an oversight for the police. What we do is we meet with Chief McCullen, and we go over the cases. And we look at what they're doing to make sure that they are handling the cases and they're just not letting them ride and that they're not, just covering them up. I'm a retired police officer. I'm also a minister. And we check on them, but we have a good relationship in checking. They let us know what's going on, those cases that need to go on to court. You see, they go on to court. Sometimes it takes a little while to get the process going, but it happens. It does happen. Okay.
We're going to ask U.S. Attorney Bill Hochul to actually answer your question. Even though you're not on the mic and no one can hear you, the question is, who is doing investigations, conducting investigations against police officers who have been accused of a crime? So I'm going to ask the U.S. Attorney, William Hochul, to address that question. And everyone's questions are going to be addressed. I can't read any faster. That last question was a multiple-part question, and we want to make sure that the questions are answered thoroughly and to the fullest.
It's better, probably better to go here.
Thank you, Crystal, and thank you, members of the community. Thank you also, Reverend Gillison, for inviting our office, the United States Attorney's Office, to be here. The question was, and I'll just repeat it so everybody can hear, who is doing oversight of police agencies? Now, of course, here we're talking about Buffalo, but it could include county sheriffs. It could include state troopers. It could even include federal law enforcement, because, of course, we have all those different types of police officers that are operating every day in the city of Buffalo. The answer is this. We have, of course, a system where we have the district attorney who has authority to enforce state law. We have the New York State Attorney General who can also act as a prosecutor. And then specifically when police officers cross the line, we have my office, the United States Attorney's Office. And as many of you know, we are a people that work without regard to anybody's title, without regard to anybody's particular political party. Whether you're rich or poor makes no difference. The United States Department of Justice believes in equal justice under law, and that's what we've been doing. Now, for those of you who saw the letter that I wrote to the Buffalo News on Thursday, you'd already know that just in the past few years, working with all those different police agencies, we actually have, in fact, convicted of civil rights violations, federal civil rights violations, excessive force, cases where police officers have crossed the line and have beaten up community folks. We've convicted six of those folks just in the past few years. Now, my responsibility is to get them charged, and so I have a staff of people that do that, and we have very, very talented, very, very experienced assistant U.S. attorneys who handle these very sensitive cases. Now, putting aside the excessive force civil rights cases, we also charge all the time police officers and people that are even in civilian capacity, but they're in police agencies. We charge them with all kinds of other crimes, too, stealing money from parking meters. We've charged law enforcement officials with looking the other way at the Kensington Towers when there was supposed to be asbestos removed a certain way. There was some public officials that signed a form saying asbestos is taken care of, and in fact it wasn't. So we charge them all, we convict them all. We haven't lost a case. Sentencing, as you know, though, is not anything to do with our office. That's the judge. I can never speak for a judge. That's their role. Now, the last piece I'll say, because it's very important, I've been in law enforcement almost 30 years. And I've been both in D.C. and I've been here in Buffalo now since 1991. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of thousands of contacts with people and police officers every day. With all of those contacts, we've charged and convicted six. So I go back to one of the questions that was earlier. You need, if there's something that's going on that I don't know about, you need to get those complaints to me or to the agency heads, the Buffalo police heads. I work with all these folks here. And if you don't want to go to the Buffalo police, if it involves Buffalo police, you can talk to the FBI. We've got the head of the FBI here as well, in Special Agent in Charge, Brian Botig. So there is a tremendous amount of oversight in the ways I just told you. Please keep it in perspective, but I, for one, believe even one that crossed the line is too much. So we're going to keep going after them. Don't worry about that.
Yes. Our next question, which is an anonymous question, it asks, why does it seem when white police officers patrol areas of people of color, do they put their hands on their guns when they are approaching a person of color? Doesn't this indicate that they regard every person of color as a criminal and suspect? And what is the Buffalo Police policy with regard to this?
I can't speak for individual officers' actions when approaching suspects or different community members. Excuse me? What I can say is there's policies in place, there's procedures in place. I'd have to have specifics about the case, about what took place, and then make maybe I could figure out how or why it happened. Again, each case is different. Officers approach public at different times for different reasons. I don't know in this case what the reason was.
One moment, please. Now, whoever that is that's hollering and screaming, all right, we are trying to be, these are guests in our house. We do not handle business like this, screaming and hollering at one another. You're not going to get anything done. We want everyone to be heard. We want our guests to be respected. Of course, you may not agree with what they say. I don't agree with everything I've heard, but I will listen. And then we can reason together. All right? As a community, we are better than this. Amen. Thank you. Would you go ahead, please?
We're going to go to the next question, and this is a rather lengthy question, but important nevertheless. The first question is, does the BPD have a written stop and frisk policy? As a practice, the officers from the housing unit regularly stop and search people on BMHA property, even when they aren't doing anything wrong. This question comes from one of our youth in one of the BMHA properties. My friends and I can't go to the store or play basketball without being stopped or being questioned about where we live, where we are going, and what we are doing. It's gotten so bad that I don't want to leave my house because I don't want to deal with the harassment, but this is my neighborhood where people know me and I don't feel safe anywhere else. Constantly stopping people and treating them like suspects hurts our relationship with the police. People I talk to don't even want to call the police when they need help because they are scared of being turned against themselves. We have real safety issues in public housing, but it feels like police just want to harass us and make everyone scared to leave their houses instead of working with us to make our community safe. The last police oversight committee meeting, BPD and BMHA representatives promised to work with residents on a real security plan. Where is that security plan?
Good evening. My name is Kevin Brinkworth. I'm with the Housing Authority Police. I work with the Buffalo Police. We do not have a stop and frisk policy on record. We do not have a formal stop. Our officers work within the projects. We work with the authority, and we have. We have a difficult job. We have a difficult job in there. We're trying to ensure the safety of the majority of the people in that in those units. And unfortunately, we do have some people in the units that we do cause some problems. We do have some issues with trespassers within the buildings. Some of them are selling drugs. We're trying to ensure the people we don't. Yes, they are. Absolutely, the majority of them are. Yes, ma'am. The majority of people in the housing units are law abiding, but our officers are trying to ensure the safety of those people in those units. And sometimes we do need to stop some people if we do believe that they are causing issues, or if they are breaking the law. If we, if they're trespassing, we're trying to. Sometimes we have to question them to see if they are trespassing. Sometimes they're acting in a manner that is suspicious. But we're trying. We do have cause to stop them when they are trespassing. We believe they do not belong in there. It's a difficult job, and we're working with the authority. And we did have a meeting recently where we're going to sit down and hopefully put together a plan.
If somebody feels that they were stopped, if somebody feels they were stopped inappropriately, there is a system in place. Call Internal Affairs and we'll investigate. I believe this administration has shown that we don't tolerate inappropriate behavior. We take action when it's necessary. We work well with the U.S. Attorney's Office, the FBI, the District Attorney's Office. We don't tolerate it. But we need to know about it. If somebody feels they were wrong, they should file a complaint and we'll investigate. And when you file a complaint, when you file a complaint, we can't. Thank you.
Commissioner, if the residents wanted to meet with you or have a community meeting in their housing area, would you be willing to do that?
We would be willing to meet with residents in different complexes. We can set up meetings. I don't have an issue with that. In fact, that's probably a very good idea.
We actually have one of the commissioners from BMHA, from the Board of Commissioners here, and he'd like to answer that as well.
I just would like to say we just met with the police department, and we found out there were some improprieties. If all of the presidents, if there are any council presidents here today of those areas, Langfield, Marine Drive, would you be so kind before I leave or you leave to give me your name? We will be sitting with you so we can make a collective plan and put something in action so that our people will feel safe. It will include residents, but what we want to make sure of this one thing. What we're doing tonight is not good, and we can never solve a problem if we're going to just yell at each other. So that's my decision today, is that we come together and work it out in peace.
Thank you, Pastor. The next question is, would you consider any of the following: mandatory periodic sensitivity and or diversity training and counseling for officers who may have gotten jaded over the years dealing with difficult people and circumstances? This is a multiple part question. A hotline number to report police abuse or excessive force cases for those who may be reluctant to report, keeping a tally of the officers' names and types of complaints to see if there's a pattern amongst any officers. Independent investigating body for police complaints, because the police and governing themselves have to worry about financial ramifications of their findings. Using the Attorney General's Office or the United States Attorney Office to present alleged police abuse cases to the grand jury, because the Erie County District Attorney's Office often works too closely with police officers and refuses to investigate.
That's a several part question. We do have, as I said, various sources to report police misconduct. And we went through that list, everything from the website to coming to City Hall to going to the U.S. Attorney's Office, the FBI. We do work very closely with our federal partners and the District Attorney's Office, as I said. And since 2010, I believe we prosecuted over 10 officers on different scenarios. So we do take these complaints very seriously. We can't always. Sometimes you get a complaint, and sometimes the officer didn't do anything wrong. Sometimes the officer did everything wrong, and there's sometimes that we can't prove it one way or the other. So it always isn't a slam dunk that we can charge somebody, but we do take these complaints very seriously. As I said, many different ways. We do look for patterns. We have a computer system that works with Internal Affairs that we track all the officers' behavior, all the complaints, and it flags different behavior, different abuse, and then we do look at these officers harder. As I said, we work with the U.S. Attorney. We have counseling programs, an EAP program within the department, but as I said earlier, if you have a complaint about the way officers act, whether it's just conduct or whether it's worse, we need to know about it. I can't do anything about it unless we know about it. And as I said, we've been very proactive. One of the main things the mayor tasked me with when he appointed me to this position is to really investigate the complaints coming from the community. As he said earlier, we're continuing looking to upgrade policies, procedures, and training, and we need the community's input. We need to work with the community. When we work with you, when you work with us, we get the job done much better than working without. So it's very important. We put together in 2010, we reestablished a community police officer program. And it's my goal in 2015 to make every one of our officers a community police officer. They need to get out there. They need to engage the community. And we're working on a whole systematic change in different areas. So, again, we need your input. We don't need yelling, shouting back and forth. We need to know what's wrong. We need to know your ideas. We need people to step forward.
Next question is, what is the percentage of non-white police officers in the city of Buffalo? Second part to that is, can you consider an intentional recruiting program for non-white police officers in the city of Buffalo so there can be more officers that look like us?
Currently, the percentages in the city of Buffalo. White officers are 70.61%. Black officers are 21.36%. Hispanics are 7.35%, Asian 0.27, and other 0.41. Those are the percentages.
Let me ask for that.
I have it right here.
Yeah.
Okay. On. Now, the number of officers by union contract, they don't have to live in the city of Buffalo. I'm of the opinion. Can I talk, please? I'm of the opinion that every officer should live in the city of Buffalo. I've lived in the city my whole life, and I believe Buffalo would be a better place if every officer, every fireman, every teacher lived in the city. Back in 2007, I visited the Chicago Police Department, and on the trip from the airport, when the officer picked me up, one of the first things I learned is that every officer, every fireman, every teacher lives in the city. They have virtual neighborhoods, and they enhance the neighborhoods, and they bring a tax base. So I'm of the opinion everyone should. But there is a union contract out there. Currently, out of 735 employees, 323 live in the city, and 412 do not. Again, if I could change that, I would. But we're living with a contract. We're living with civil service that allows them. We live with what we have.
Well, that's not just the contract. That's New York state law. New York state law does not require the police officers to live in the city of Buffalo. Now, just recently, we did negotiate a contract with the Buffalo Firefighters Union, and in that negotiated contract, going forward, every firefighter has to live in the city of Buffalo.
Our next question, if you need a yellow card, you need to put the question on the yellow card. We're trying to get to all of them. He is absolutely right. That question was not answered. Can there be an intentional recruitment for minority candidates or for police force?
Absolutely, we can do an intentional recruitment of minorities. We need for our people to be prepared to take this job. We need for our people to not get arrested. We need for our people to not have poor credit ratings. We need for our people to get ourselves together so that we can have a civil service job, so that we can serve the people that live in our communities. Also, the last recruitment effort, I actually was a lieutenant at the time in the recruitment effort, and I ran it. So, yes, we wanted people that looked like me on the police department. So we need for you to take the test and stay in the good graces of everything else that you need in your background to have this job. So, yes, we can do a concerted recruitment effort for minorities in the city of Buffalo.
Let me also say this about the remaining candidates that are on the police officer exam. Right now, there is a split that is almost 50-50 between minorities and white candidates. So that means going forward, there is the opportunity to bring on more minority candidates on the police department. We, going forward, will be conducting recruitment just like we did recently with the Buffalo Fire Department, where members of this community and the clergy were instrumental in getting masses of African Americans, Latinos, and others to take that exam. Now, in over several thousand people that took that exam, almost 50%, for the first time in the history of this exam, are African American and Latino. So that is how we will conduct recruitment going forward.
We're getting into crunch time, so from this point forward, I want to get to as many questions as possible. I'm going to ask everybody to limit their answers in as much as possible.
Crystal, I just want to say this. As we're going through, Executive Director Rodriguez can say this, we cannot speak to any specific cases, names, or anything like that. It's we just cannot speak to any active particular cases. So if we do not reach your, it's because we just can't speak to that. But we're going to try to get to as many questions as we can.
This is an important... Sure.
So even though we're getting to crunch time, Pastor Gillison just indicated that we can go over time to get more questions
That's
answered.
That's great.
What should I do when my civil rights are being violated constantly by police officers who seem to have no care for them? I'm frequently being stopped and harassed by officers pulling me over for what they say is traffic infractions. I have 10 years of tickets that the police constantly say that I have broken the law. My license is marked. My civil rights have constantly been violated, and I have constantly complained, and nothing has been done. Are police officers being trained on civil rights and how to respect them?
One of the things that my office does is gets to every police recruit in the academy that's going through, and we give a civil rights presentation. And we talk to them about the things that they're supposed to do and the things that they're not supposed to do. We have to hit them early. We have to drive this in. They need to be the catalyst for change within their department. I'm expecting the young officers to go in there, and if there's bad things happening, they need to stand up to the people that are violating people's civil rights. If you have a civil rights complaint, just as Bill Hochul said earlier, you can report it to Buffalo Police Department through the various means that they have suggested. You can call, visit, or email the FBI office, or call the United States Department of Justice in D.C. They take complaints, or go directly to the United States Attorney's Office. Buffalo.
He is from FBI. The Buffalo FBI office.
All right, so you're asking a question and you're getting
right,
serious.
Yeah.
That was the next question I was going to ask.
It was
the next question.
Just stay with us, okay?
Okay.
Stay
it was us. Exactly stay, the next question. It's like everyone thinks they have a next question. We need you to be patient.
Yeah, I'm going to have Commissioner Durenda answer that in a second. His department has been investigating the body cameras. It's something that we're looking at. The cost is pretty substantial, but I will have Commissioner Durenda speak to that.
We have done research. We have tested some body cameras in different districts. We are still looking at them. There are a couple things. I believe it would be a good idea to have body cameras. I believe it would lower complaints. I believe it would change bad behavior if they're doing something they shouldn't be doing. But there is a cost. Initial cost estimates about $1.5 million to outfit the department, And then after that, there's a recurring cost. There's a recurring cost to store the data. Everything has to be downloaded. Everything has to be done. Again, I'm for body cameras. I'm not saying I'm not, but there's a lot of things to overcome before we can get there.
Okay. So again, his question is, why not take the money from the city's rainy day fund? Because we are barred by law from using that money for anything but a fiscal emergency as designed by government accounting principles. So we could not use that money in that way.
I'm going to go on to the next question. The next question is, this would be directed towards the undersheriff and Chief Gass, NFTA, New York State Troopers, and Erie County Sheriff's Office are constantly patrolling in the neighborhood. They are rude. They stop us constantly, and we'd like to know why they are able to do that in the city of Buffalo.
The number is 858-8088, 858-8088. You can be anonymous. You can write us a letter. You do not have to identify yourself. If somebody is wearing a uniform that I am wearing right now that has the Erie County Sheriff's Office patch and they are not behaving, you need to report them. I give you my word, we do not tolerate police abuse. We pride ourselves in wearing this uniform. And we do not have an exemption from the laws of this country. We have an obligation to follow them. I will say this, if you do file a complaint with us, myself or the Chief Scott Johnson, we do keep you informed and tell you what is going on. And we do the best we have with the information and evidence to either prove or disprove. But again, we do have zero tolerance in the Erie County Sheriff's Office. We want to help our partners in the city of Buffalo, keep the community safe, and please do not hesitate one second if somebody is wearing my uniform, is mistreating you, talking down to you, or not acting appropriately.
I believe one part of that question was jurisdiction, and as far as the transit police is concerned, we do have jurisdiction throughout Erie and Niagara counties. So our jurisdictional authority is not limited to the transportation system. However, the transportation system is our core mission. That's what we concentrate on. We utilize our officers within the transportation system to answer complaints and to make that system as safe as possible. As far as complaints, there's a number of ways complaints could be addressed. You can call my office, which is 855-7665. You can go online to the NFTA website, and there is a form available that can be filled out and mailed in, or you can come directly into the office at 1404 Main Street, which is Main and Utica, request a form, or ask to talk to the captain that's on duty to express your dissatisfaction.
Thank you, Chief. The next question, let's be real. We are here today because of the recent decisions in other areas. However, there have been incidents that have happened here lately. Police brutality is going on right here in the city of Buffalo. What is going to be done? It is getting worse. How is the community going to build trust? I think what that means is, how is the police department going to build trust in the community if they continue to do what they do in the community?
As I stated several times, we don't tolerate the behavior. We've shown that we don't tolerate it. We work with our partners. Again, when a couple videos surfaced, we take immediate action. If we can prove allegations, we take immediate action. So if you have a complaint and something's going on, please let us know. Bill Hochul and I meet once once every week, once every 2 weeks. Same thing with Brian from the FBI. Everybody up here takes these allegations very, very seriously.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Let Jim Barnese answer.
We're going to have Jim Barnese from the Erie County District Attorney's Office also address this.
I can state that when there are allegations that can be substantiated, as the panel has said, that our office has indicted police officers when the occasion does present itself. There have been a few over the last couple of years that I could speak to. They haven't been for brutality necessarily, but they've been for other areas of malfeasance. When there is credible evidence that can be acted upon regarding any crime perpetrated by an officer, just as a fellow citizen, our office is prepared to act on it. We've done so both in conjunction with the federal partners we have here and on our own.
Mr. Barghezi, I have another question as a follow-up. It says, will you commit to a special prosecutor for every time a Buffalo police officer is accused of a crime? How will we prevent a repetition of injustice done by the DA's office, such as in Ferguson and in New York? I guess this is a general question.
Okay. And for those of you who don't know, I'm James Barnese. I'm chief of the homicide unit for the district attorney's office. Currently this year, the Erie County District Attorney Frank Sedita is president of the statewide District Attorneys Association. I know for a fact that that district attorneys from across the state, there are about approximately 50 of them, have been meeting this week. They are talking with the Attorney General. They are also talking specifically with the governor to address some of the concerns raised and some of the suggestions raised regarding a special prosecutor. Where that heads or what the ultimate decisions are still to be worked out, but I do know that that is something that is being discussed statewide at this time, and that discussion is being led by Frank Sedita, who will be traveling to meet with the governor, has spoken to the Attorney General, and that's one of the specific issues they wish to address going forward. Our office phone number is 858-2400.
Okay.
Ma'am, first of all, we've explained that we can't speak to specific cases. And by going into that specific case, you are not helping Ms. Horn. You are not helping her by doing that. You are not helping her by doing that. Let me recognize that we've been joined by Erie County Legislator Barbara Miller-Williams, and we're going to go on to the next question.
Why are police officers who have multiple complaints against them allowed to continue to carry a weapon and patrol the street?
As the commissioner said, we investigate every complaint. We have a computer program in place we've been using for several years. It's used across the nation by major city police departments. It tracks our officers for us. It sends us alerts automatically when something shows maybe a pattern on a certain officer. We take that information. We immediately send it back to the chiefs in the districts and other assignments, housing and school resource officers. They review the information. They look over and decide whether they need to sit that officer down and have a conversation with that officer and maybe address some of the issues, or maybe sometimes there is no issue to be addressed. But it's a good system in place. I'm not sure many people knew that even existed. Again, this commissioner, I've been on the department 30 years. This particular police commissioner has brought officers up in charges more than any other commissioner I've worked for. He is really doing an outstanding job in trying to address some of the issues that we have. But again, like you said, we do need the information given to us so that we can take action. Your question was, why are they put back on the street? But I need specifics on an officer to know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay.
No. I need to know what officer you might be.
Sometimes there's allegations, and there may be multiple allegations. But we have to be able to prove those allegations. if we prove the allegations and there's criminal activity involved, as we said, we have shown that we work with our partners, the district attorney, the U.S. attorney, and we prosecute these officers. Probably more so since I've taken over in 2010, that we really do what we have to do to rid the department of people that don't belong here. We have lots of fine officers who each and every day go out there and put their lives on the line. They do a fantastic job. But what we hear about is that small group who doesn't. But I will promise you this. We are looking at each and every case, and when we can't prove allegations, we take action and we do what we have to rid the department of these officers.
Thank you, Commissioner. Really quick question, Mayor. Why aren't suburban police representatives here today? I know you said we wanted to focus on the City of Buffalo. Somebody had a quick question. Why do we not have suburban police officers?
We are here focused on the City of Buffalo. I don't manage the suburban police, and I know that you all want answers to the issues with the Buffalo police. That's why we are focusing on the Buffalo police.
I will say this, Mayor. We are part of this. It's sponsored by NFJC, which is the National Federation of Just Communities. I know Lana Benitovich, who's the executive director, is here. She's been working with police chiefs all in Western New York. She hopes to have a roundtable discussion. Look to hear from that. I see NFJC here. So we're working with that in the near future. And Bill Hook, who's a U.S. attorney, please.
Yes, thank you. We enforced the law against suburban police agencies as well. We convicted an officer from West Seneca and an officer from the City of Tonawanda over the past few years for civil rights violations. So our territory doesn't end at the city limits. It's 17 counties, which it's almost to Syracuse. The other thing, though, is all the chiefs do get together at least once a month. We talk about all kinds of things. The FBI special agent in charge is at that meeting. I'm at that meeting. Very often, district attorneys there, and these are things that I can assure you the chiefs are concerned about, and I echo what I had heard before. I've never seen such commitment from the administration that I've seen just since I've been the U.S. attorney, which is 2010. So you all, as the citizens, need to know you've got a good department here, and the leadership is listening, and if things aren't right, what I'm hearing, and I hope you are, is that you just need to keep sending them the complaints. If you don't want to go that way, certainly send it to the FBI or my office, and we're going to keep going on it. So thank you all for being here, because this is very helpful.
Our next question, if there is going to be true oversight of police conduct, these people cannot have had any prior ties or relationships with the police department. Otherwise, there is an appearance of conflict of interest. It's not a question, it's a comment. The next question, there is a real disparity in who is arrested for specific crimes. Those committed in certain neighborhoods for non-minority citizens seem to be often overlooked and not prosecuted, or they are given a warning and let go while minority citizens are arrested, given records, and hindered. The laws are not enforced equally, as it is illegal for a citizen to visit, and why is it illegal for a citizen to videotape an altercation between a police officer and a citizen?
It's not illegal for a citizen to videotape an officer, and we've made it very clear to each and every one of our officers. You have a right to videotape them when you're in a public forum. If you take out your camera, it's your right to do so. We're making each and every one of our officers aware. If they're not aware, they should be. They've been told 20 times. As far as arrest in different minority groups or white groups, the Buffalo Police Department polices where we get the complaints. So if your neighborhood has issues, we're there to help. People want us there. We want to be visible. We want to help. We're there to make a difference, to make your neighborhoods safer. But we respond to where the complaints are, whether it's complaints on drugs, whether it's complaints on different activity. We're there because we're being asked to be there.
And Commissioner, as a follow-up question, if there is a citizen who is filming an altercation and an officer asks him or her for her phone or her camera, what should they do at that moment?
He doesn't have a right to take the film or camera. There may be some extreme circumstance where an officer might ask for video as evidence, but in general speaking, you have a right to videotape, and they don't have a right to erase your camera and or phone. They have a right to videotape. Again, if a situation that occurs, report it. We'll take action. And as in the past, and I keep saying, we don't tolerate inappropriate behavior, and we've taken action.
Commissioner, I have a quick question. Is it lawful for a male police officer to physically check a female civilian? What are the rights versus male and female police towards the opposite sex? The next one is, what jurisdiction does the transit police have in regards to how far the NFTA police officers can pursue a chase?
There may
you can
be
get one. Can get
there may be a time when, in extreme circumstances, a male officer would pat down a female for a weapon if they believed they were armed and that he believed his life was in danger. But in general, if there's a female to be searched, they will call a female officer, or should.
As I previously mentioned, the Transit Police Department has jurisdictional authority within Erie and Niagara County, right? So if the question is a chase, we do have a pursuit policy in place, but our jurisdictional responsibility actually extends also to Genesee County, although we don't have active patrols or an active presence in Genesee County, but primarily Erie and Niagara counties.
And just on the groping, if you will, one of the officers we convicted from the city of Niagara Falls, Ryan Warm, he was his civil rights conviction was based on illegal touching of a woman. He was also a drug dealer. He was tipping off drug dealers and such, so he got convicted of two different types of crime. The civil rights crime, though, was for illegally groping a woman that he had stopped during a traffic stop.
I'd like to also add to make sure that when you are if you are videotaping an altercation between a citizen and the police, you do not in any way interfere with the case while videotaping. It's from Commissioner Sheila Wallace. The next is, my name is Chantel Franklin, and I am here to give a voice to several issues that I feel this body needs to address. And there are several, Chantel, I will personally address all of the issues, but I'm going to look at number two today. I believe this body should not only look forward into training the public on how to conduct themselves when stopped by the police, but how can the public be assured that the police are obtaining proper training on things we want included in their training? This can only be done by reaching out to as many organizations and Black clubs in the community and to assure that our voice is heard throughout the process. Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner Beattie.
Make sure we get to all the questions. I'm going to personally address all of Ms. Franklin's.
Let her answer the question, okay, and we'll come back to that.
Questions on training. Well, with the police commissioner and myself, we decided to update our training. For our supervisors, we're going to do a special training on leadership and professionalism. Our supervisors actually have day-to-day contact with our officers, and they are the leaders, so we have to make sure they're sending the right message. All of our sworn officers will receive training on ethics and integrity, and that has a lot to do with our mission statement of our police department. We want to make sure that the public is treated with respect and that we instill integrity and that we perform in an excellent way. Our use of force will be updated. That's Article 35. Domestic violence training will be updated with a lethality assessment, first aid training, community policing for all officers, law enforcement and diversity, and that's dealing with all kinds of cultures of people. We even want the public to know about our law enforcement culture. Law enforcement and the mentally ill, issues with homelessness, and we are also doing a training on the citizens' rights to record. Our legal updates are always a part of our training, and we also have implemented weekly training updates. And tonight we're going to include civil rights. Make sure they get it.
I have a quick question. Can the city of Buffalo put together a team of residents who can and will be able to assist and help solve the problems, issues of our community and city? So how can we sign up?
Hi, I'm Pastor James Giles. We have two community anti-violence programs. One in particular is the Buffalo Peacemakers. Buffalo Peacemakers is actually the city of Buffalo and the mayor's initiative to bring the community together. And when we talk about bringing the community together, we're talking about we have fathers and we have mothers and we have aunts and cousins of victims that have lost their lives on the street. And we represent the community in terms of coming out here to make sure that nobody else hurt each other. That's why we're always there at these gatherings. And this is driven by the mayor of the city of Buffalo, because before he would get in, the foundations that fund us would not get involved until the mayor put his hand on it, right? And when he put his hand on it, then all the foundations came and said, we're willing to support this. So this is his initiative. We are community residents. We have children that play in the streets. We have children that go to our schools. We have children that attend activities and events. That's why we're out there so thick, to make sure that they don't harm each other. And this is the city of Buffalo. This is their effort of coming together to make sure the residents of the city of Buffalo are involved in making peace as opposed to being disruptive.
Thank you.
We're actually going to address another one of Ms. Franklin's concerns. I think is important. There's a crisis in the African-American community with all law enforcement agencies criminalizing us in every aspect. We have to face discrimination in housing, jobs, education, justice system, et cetera. It's to the point where pets are accorded more civil protections than we are. I'd like to draw our attention to the Jenna's Law and post-release supervision. We believe that it's a violation of our civil rights for this law to be enforced by the judiciary. It gives the Division of Parole power to extend prisoners' imprisonment beyond their maximum expiration date. The law was set to further criminalize our people in the spirit of an incident that they had no dealings with, and it was a blatant abuse of power by the executive and legislative branches of our state. We would like for this to be a priority of this listening body because we believe that this is among the black codes instituted by the Confederate States during their Reconstruction era, and we want this law to be addressed accordingly. I'm going to ask Jim Barnese from the District Attorney's Office to come and discuss why the laws that are in place have to be enforced, and then maybe we can, after that, discuss how you as citizens can go about overturning or making a movement to overturn those laws.
As a member of the District Attorney's Office, similar to any member of law enforcement or the judiciary, we enforce laws that are on the books. I mean, obviously, there's a mechanism to change laws if someone believes that they're unjust, but that would be something that would be beyond anyone that's on this panel that I can see. That's something for the state legislature if a group wishes to have that addressed. So that would be the proper venue for that, would be, in my opinion. Or Congress, if it's a federal law, sure.
As you're going up, and I know this question was asked, but we just want to make sure. It says, it appears that many complaints are being investigated. Can you please set up an easy access number for complaints, similar to 411 or to 311, so that all complaints can be easily recorded and tallied? And I think there's a number, or I know this is all over the website.
Yes, the number's on our website, but the phone number for Internal Affairs is 851-4557.
Okay, please address what citizens' rights are when being approached or stopped by law enforcement for a simple traffic infraction, because unfortunately there are many people who are not aware or don't know what these these rights are. We want to make sure that people know so that unwanted arrests will not happen, as well as the safety of the officer is kept intact. Can somebody answer this simply?
First of all, when we do the training on what to do when stopped by the police, all of that comes out, and I think everyone in this room should participate in that training. People need to know they have a right to know who they're being stopped by. First of all, that's why we have our names plastered across our chest. A lot of people call, and they don't know who stopped them, and we don't understand why. Well, if they're covering them up, we have police car numbers. We even have GPS on our patrol cars. So tell us where you were. And if they are covering up their names, that is something that they are not supposed to be doing, and you need to report that to us. But you do have a right to know why you're being stopped. The biggest thing is we need for you to cooperate on the traffic stop so that it ends safely and effectively. Excuse me? Cooperate, let the officer be the person in authority and ask the questions so that we can get through it.
Ma'am, don't. We need for you to get a yellow card. The next question, sensitivity training is something that is needed and it's a given. Is the department willing to go as far as actual in-depth anti-bias training? Anti-bias training enables us to actually change the way that non-black officers see all people of color.
As the mayor said, we're here to listen. We're continuing looking to enhance our policies, procedures, and training. Whatever ideas you have, put them forward. Again, we're willing to listen to the community. We're willing to do what we have to do to have a better relationship.
Commissioner, to that effect, what I've been reading through, there's been a lot of questions regarding training, sensitivity training. I know you're talking about that. I know Deputy Commissioner talked about that. But I just want to give, if I don't ask that question, there's been quite a few questions in regards to this sensitivity training in terms of with officers, police community relations. I know you're speaking that to the general, and I know you spoke to that. But I just want to let folks know that I'm reading a lot of questions regarding sensitivity training. So
that is one of the topics that will be added to our training schedule this year going forward. We're looking at a lot of different options to enhance. We will be adding more hours, but we're looking to actually maybe even double, sometimes even triple our hours. We're working on an agreement with the union to provide more hours than probably most departments in the country. But sensitivity training is one of the topics that we will be addressing. Excuse me? Again, we'll put down some ideas, and if we can incorporate them, if we can bring in members of the community, we're going to be bringing in some outside agencies to help us with our training and do some of the training. We're always looking at other departments and best practices, and we're trying to adapt and adopt what they do. Like I said, having a great bond with the community is very important to this mayor, to this department. And we can't do our job effectively unless we work with the community and the community works with us.
Okay. The next question is the general feel of answers provided an implied innocence of amnesty of local law enforcement. Why then is there an overt assumption of guilt applied to citizens of occupied communities? The officers prosecuted in 4 years, countless citizens prosecuted, convicted or killed in that same time, innocent and guilty.
Well, first of all, we've convicted a lot more officers than the six I told you about. Those were just for civil rights violations and way more than just local officers. We've convicted county, local, and federal officers, and I just jotted it down real quickly as the question was being read, of fraud, possession of child pornography, taking a bribe in the case of a federal highway official, drug dealing. We've had a couple officers that protected drug operations. We had, in the case of the guy who was convicted of groping, somebody who used to warn drug dealers before
before a warrant or something would go down. So lots of officers, lots of people at all levels of government, positions of trust. Told you about the people that were inspectors and environmental agencies. Bottom line is, and I'll speak for the district attorney on this too, because we have the same oath, we presume everybody's innocent, whether you're an officer or civilian, whether you've got a title or whether you're just one of the folks, unless and until we can prove that you committed the crime. And that's another point that the commissioner, Durenda, brought up. There may be allegations out there that just the proof can't get developed enough where we can charge a case, and we can't bring a case unless we have enough to charge it. Now, the convictions for excessive force I told you about, there's other cases pending right now. I can't get into specifics, but there's people under indictment for violating civil rights, and there's always investigations going, which are at any time. They may end up in charges, they may not. It depends on the evidence. So there's no presumption of guilt or innocence with respect to the U.S. Attorney's Office or even, and I'll speak now again for the District Attorney's Office.
This seems to be a very popular question. We've gotten several about this, but what sort of restorative justice practices has the BPD put in place to ensure that justice is actually served?
Pastor Giles, I know you're familiar. I know your organization does something with restorative justice, and that's a combination of this using. Well, I'll let you explain.
At the very heart of restorative justice is developing relationships, and the Buffalo Police Department has developed some very concrete relationships, certainly with not only Buffalo Peacemakers but SNUG, another anti-violence group that we have working on our city streets. The Sheriff Department has extended itself with Back to Basics, Voice Buffalo, and Prisons Are People Too, developing relationships centered around restorative justice. And it's at the heart of it is about developing relationships so we can sit down at the table and discuss some of the issues that are adversely affecting populations that we represent so that we can come to some reasonable solution to kind of solve these problems. So the Buffalo Police Department has been on the front line. I certainly have access to certainly not only all of these chiefs, but both commissioners as well as both deputy commissioners as well as the commissioner himself in terms of bringing issues to their table so that they're not just going to be sliding under the rug or anything like that. And they have certainly avail themselves to my organization as well as the other organizations that represent Buffalo Peacemakers, as well as the clergy and clergy caucus that we are partnering with. They have extended themselves to them because of this restorative justice idea of building relationships.
And this is a related point. I know Reverend Diggs was just at a meeting with Chief Dennis J. Richards, a member of the District Attorney's Office, FBI, my office, other members of the clergy. We have brought back about 80 recently released convicted folks at the Erie County Hall. It was about a week and a half ago, and we basically said this. We said, we know that you're at risk because statistics show, unfortunately, if you've been recently released from prison, you're either going to commit another offense or you're going to be a victim of an offense, and that's statistical. So what we said is, look, don't run the risk again of getting in the trouble of any of the police agencies or the prosecutors. Here's some alternatives. And Reverend Diggs presented some alternatives. Dwayne Ferguson was there from Mad Dads. There was a person from the mayor's office presenting job opportunities. And that, again, that's just another outside-the-box approach, hopefully to convey that the police don't want to just be locking folks up. They really are trying to get to solutions, and that was a very positive, I thought, event. And that's not the only time. We do that about once every 4 or 5 months, I think, Reverend Diggs, or so.
So with restorative justice, it is a concept that several members of the community have presented. There is a restorative justice coalition. The city's police department is looking at how those concepts could potentially be implemented in the city of Buffalo, potentially working with other law enforcement partners like the Erie County DA's office. So it is something that we're looking at. We know that members of the community have brought it forward. Many of you who have brought this concept forward are in the room today, and it is definitely being considered.
Arlie Daniels has texted in a question. He couldn't be here. But he is, his suggestion, I'm believing, that because the clergy have already began the conversation for overview of police misconduct and procedure, maybe they should be added to the investigating body of the Citizens Committee made up of clergy and upstanding residences. It seems to me that if we are serious about reforms, then the police department shouldn't object to having the newly formed committee to interview or talk with the parties involved when it comes to accusations of misconduct of police officer. And the committee, would then recommend what they think would be in the best interest of all parties involved, especially the community, after hearing from reliable witnesses. And of course, the police department would have the final say in the matter if any action needs to be taken against their own. But at least someone other than police department professionals, standard internal affairs unit would be involved. And because the Common Council is the governing body on city issues, their recommendations would be very important from a legal point of view.
We do work with the council and Councilman Rivera and his group that oversee police, the Oversight Committee. As I said, we work with other agencies. We work with the U.S. Attorney, District Attorney. We're always looking for a better way of doing business, so we'll listen and we'll see what we can do.
The next question, as a young black man, what are my rights for self-defense against police officer if I'm feeling threatened or harassed?
Well, if you're feeling harassed, we hope you start out by filing a complaint. But during the situation, if you are being stopped by the police, I cannot ask you enough or tell you enough that we need for you to be compliant. The moment you start to become non-compliant, and I spent several years out on the street, you could end up with a charge called resisting arrest. And that is something that we don't want to give you. So if you know you're being arrested and you walk up to me and put your hands behind your back, guess what? I'm happy. But when you start to fight with me and struggle, you're going to get charged with resisting. And I don't want to come to work and fight every day. And I don't think anybody on the police department has any intent to come to work and fight with the public every single day.
All right, I have another question. Why is there such an abundance of guns? Why is there such an abundance of guns, drugs in our community when we produce neither? And what happens to the money taken in these raids? What happens to the money taken in these raids? Maybe we can get somebody federally and maybe we can get somebody locally to answer that.
The money taken in raids is always forfeited through an asset forfeiture program, and the money that the U.S. government receives is put back into the general treasury fund, and then certain funds are distributed out to the various local police departments, state, local, county police departments that participated on the case.
Where the money goes. Go ahead, Pastor.
We need an answer to the first part, number one. Why does it seem to be that this community is allowed to have drugs and guns come into this community when the community itself produces neither? That's one of the questions. And the other question, of course, was what happens to the monies that the local police confiscate from persons when they raid homes? How does that work?
First, in terms of the guns and drugs, because we live in a free society, you can't, if you're a police officer, you can't stop anybody without probable cause, and you can't search them and seize evidence without probable cause. So guns and drugs get in all sorts of creative ways. I mean, you can go online, you know as well as I do. We arrested one gentleman who used 8 different girls to bring guns in. He was the guy behind the scenes, no doubt, went to Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania with these young ladies, and in exchange for some money, they bought guns over the counter from sporting goods stores, came on in, and he sold them on the streets here to folks who were misusing them. But with a lead from the community, if it rises to the level of probable cause, if you get it to the police, they don't want guns and drugs here, they may be able to act on it. And if they do and they seize the evidence, that's great for the prosecution side, because then we have enough to charge. I'll turn it over for the forfeiture, but as the special agent indicated, when the federal government seizes money or property or cars, if it's cash, it goes to the United States Treasury. If it's property, we have one of the best asset forfeiture people in the United States. We try to keep it here in the community. Over the years, Hananiah Lutheran Ministries benefited from that property on Genesee Street, which was a marijuana grow. We turned over a building to It Takes a Village, I believe, with the mayor's input. So if there's properties, drug houses, we don't want them just to be eyesores for your neighborhoods. We're going to try to make it productive properties. We're actually working on some other ideas as well. You have to be a not-for-profit agency. You have to go through some application process, and different members of the ministers here know about that because I've met with them. But we try to recycle it to the extent possible, or we have to follow the law and send it down to D.C. So,
as far as money taken in drug raids, it's the same process with asset forfeiture. The money goes through the federal government and then back to the local police department to be used for different things. And as far as guns and drugs coming into the community, they're coming in from all different areas. Guns in Buffalo recovered in crimes, 50% of the guns used in crimes and recovered in the city of Buffalo are coming from somewhere within New York State. Whether taken in burglaries, whether they're pistol permit holders who pass away and the guns are left, and 10 years later the gun shows up, it's showing up on our streets, causing us problems. And we do everything we can to remove these guns. And we've been quite effective. I think the number of over 12,000 guns since 2006, which is just a ridiculous number. But the guns are out there, they are flowing into our communities, and they are causing problems. The same thing with the drugs.
The next question. Why do Buffalo police have so many checkpoints only in black neighborhoods? I know some people are not driving right with their registration and vehicle, but certain areas you never see a police checkpoint like in white neighborhoods. They're only doing it in black neighborhoods.
Well, we do checkpoints in different neighborhoods throughout the city, but primarily in the crime hotspots where we're having issues with the guns, with the drugs, with the shootings, with the homicides. Again, I believe it's we're getting good feedback from the community. They like the checkpoints in their neighborhoods, but they have been all over the city. It's just where we're, as I said earlier, we respond to complaints, we respond to problems, and that's where the police usually end up.
No, it's
not stereotyping. It's where we respond to complaints. So if your complaints about your house is being, it's data-driven. Every day, we look at where the crime's occurring, where the reported crime's occurring. So it's not white-black. It's not anything. It's data. So if you're reporting a crime, a robbery in your neighborhood, if the shooting's happening in your neighborhood, people want us in those neighborhoods. We want to be visible. We want to be out there because I'd rather stop a crime from ever happening than have to investigate it later.
Have you ever considered meeting with each pastor of a local church to discuss issues related to police policy and community relations?
I believe on Thursday we're meeting with a coalition of pastors, but we're always willing to meet with anybody who wants to meet with us. We work well with different community groups, the Peacemakers. They do a fantastic job. Each and every one of them organizations have been, I can't say enough about what they've done for this city to make it safer, and our officers have bought into working with them. But again, we're willing to meet with whatever groups want to meet with us. You can call police headquarters and talk to my secretary and set up an appointment. We return calls. You can call my office. Leave your name. We'll get back to you.
Chris, I have a question.
Sure.
Since it's illegal to stop an individual randomly, under what standards, grounds, or circumstances do you allow your officers to stop an individual, ask for identification? It says, could all police departments represented ask this questions? So I know, Commissioner, you kind of answered this, but we'll start from NFTA, Sheriff, and we'll go on down.
We stop and question people if there's probable cause to believe they've been involved in an incident. We don't subscribe to stop and frisk. We don't make random stops. If it's a motor vehicle stop, there has to be an articulated reason for that stop, a traffic violation. It's not done randomly. It's based on probable cause. The vast majority of our stops and our questions take place in the transportation system because we have a complaint, we have a fight, we have an issue where somebody is breaking the law, and we need to address that situation. Most of those situations do not end up in an arrest. One of our busiest times is during school dismissal. We put additional officers on from 3 to 5 in the transportation system to help regulate the students who are moving through that system. And our policy there is that arrest is a last resort. Even when we have a problem with the student, we try to rely on putting that individual through the school disciplinary system rather than through the courts. We don't want to take a 13, 14, 15-year-old or even a 16 or 17-year-old and put them through the legal system if we can avoid that. It's not always possible to avoid it, but that's our general policy.
Our policy is the same, and not to be redundant, as Commissioner Durando and Chief Gast. Our police encounters with citizens better be based on probable cause, or somebody matching the description, or something in relation to an incident. And I'll just add that we preach in the sheriff's office to treat people with respect and communicate. And also, if there is a situation where you have to talk to an individual, try to be as brief as possible, and there's nothing wrong after the incident is over shaking somebody's hand and saying thank you. Again, if you feel you're mistreated, like I said earlier, by somebody in my uniform that I'm wearing tonight, or you got stopped for no reason, or you feel it's because of the color of your skin, please call us. I will tell you if we're able to prove it, that person won't be wearing our uniform anymore.
Sam Herbert wants to ask of the United States Attorney, if we can stop Cuban cigars from coming into the country, why can't we stop guns from coming into the community? Did you hear me? He said if we can stop Cuban cigars from coming, how come we can't stop guns?
That might have been a little tongue-in-cheek, but as I think the commissioner indicated, at least half of the guns that are recovered here in Buffalo are from within New York State, and Cuban cigars obviously coming across from a foreign country present multiple opportunities to stop, including when they leave a country, when they're crossing into the border. We have border officials, and then on that whole journey, they could get stopped at any point. And unlike Cuban cigars, which obviously are illegal, guns are legal under the Second Amendment of the Constitution. So complicated, I know, and difficult sometimes to stop and keep from the hands of folks that really are not legally entitled to have them.
Crystal, you got one?
I do. In People v. Howard, Court of Appeals, New York State Court of Appeals opined that it is the right of the citizens to whom a police officer posed a question to walk away or even run, and absent probable cause to believe he has committed or about to commit or is committing a crime, the police may not pursue. Moreover, it is the right of the citizen to remain unidentified and silent, not assist an officer in his or her investigation. Are police personnel made aware of this law? Did the police officer trained to know this law and to know that this is in fact law in New York State?
We do train our officers on laws. We do legal updates. Is your right as a citizen not to answer questions? Is your right to remain silent? And you can do so. Is your right not to assist in an investigation? But if an officer has a job to do and you're a suspect, it's his right to make an arrest. But there's proper ways of doing that. But yes, they are trained under law.
All right. You have your follow-up? No? All right. One quick question, and this is more of a comment, but I want to take advantage of while we have our elected school board representatives here, and this is more of a comment just to get a sentiment. I've been reading this question from a few of you. The most critical issue facing our youth is the poor quality of education. When will the citizens of Buffalo support and demand a higher quality of education for all children? Children should not be in the fourth grade before a teacher realizes that they cannot read. Let's break the pipeline to prison. So part of what we're doing, we're answering questions, but we want to try to kind of, we're combining to see, we have an active and captive audience. We have our elected officials here. They want to hear from you. I know each and every one of them attends community meetings, so I just wanted to share that with our school board members.
Next question we have is with regard to the body cameras we talked about earlier. Is it possible to get a grant to pay for the cameras? And what about the philanthropic organization locally? It will certainly provide an opportunity to look at officers and their behaviors.
Do we see any grant people out here, people giving money? No? Not everybody? No? Let's see.
As I spoke earlier, we are in the process of looking at cameras, different types of cameras, gathering information. There is a substantial cost. I believe, as I said, it would be a good thing, but we're still in the process of researching and testing.
Has there been a more comprehensive effort to incorporate cultural competence in addition to hiring practices that allow for law enforcement? I think we've addressed this question earlier. Explain the rights our children have when disrespecting parents and they are over the age of 18. When the police are called, they do nothing. Parents have to deal with disrespectful children. How much must we as parents tolerate? Can someone briefly maybe talk about what the law would be if the officer was called and that was the situation? That'd be domestic violence.
First of all, a lot of people have called us to their homes to spank their children, and we're not doing that, okay? So that is not our job. It is your responsibility to raise your child. So spare the rod, spoil a child. I just want to be clear. We do fill out domestic violence forms when people who are in familial relationships or interpersonal relationships, intimate relationships, when they have problems in their homes. So we would do a domestic violence investigation. Thank you.
I think it's really important because we've answered a lot of questions, but we got this comment. Community police officers in E-District do an outstanding job.
All right, Crystal. Real quick, somebody asked, how can good officers be encouraged to report bad officers, or is there a policy in terms of that?
Not only should good officers be encouraged, it's their job. If they see something, they're obligated to say something. Otherwise, they put themselves in a position to be brought up on charges, to be part of whatever activity that took place.
Okay, thank you.
Again, I can't speak.
Once again, we are precluded legally from talking about specific cases. It's not that we don't want to. Legally, we can't talk about specific cases with names. Those specifics we can't discuss publicly. Yes, you can contact anybody on this panel later and answer those questions. Why has the police department been giving military equipment to deal with regular civilians in the community?
There is a federal program for surplus equipment. Buffalo Police, we have not partaked in that program to this date.
Who do I speak to in order to get law enforcement representatives to speak with youth in after-school programs? How can we create a partnership for students and youth to get to know and build a personal relationship with law enforcement officials?
We're going to have Lieutenant Steve Nichols come up and address that question. He's in charge with me with our community police officers.
Go ahead.
Thank you. We speak to I'm Steve Nichols. I run the community policing program for police department. We speak to any group that wants us to speak to them, including youth groups. All you do is call my office, 851-6514. 851-6514. We'd be happy to come and talk to you. I have community police officers that love what they do. Most of you people probably know my community police officers. Just give me a call, 851-6514. We'll be more than happy to come out and talk to you.
Do you think it's fair for police officers to jump out of their cars with guns drawn on people for no reason except you look like a person that just committed a crime? It happens all the time in black communities. People have guns pulled on them for being black.
I would have to hear specifics about a case, but officers generally do not pull their guns unless they feel they're in danger. Again, I would need specifics on the case and to really explain why and who. Again, if there's a complaint, we'll investigate it, but we would need specifics. I can't just generally address a situation that I know nothing about.
Let me answer that question. When we're asking for specifics, we're asking for you to personally address one of these people with the specific person's name, officer's name, personally. We can't discuss specifics on the microphone, so we're not asking for specifics right now. We're asking for you to address it with one of the people on the panel or the internal affairs. This next question.
I had this young lady, she wanted to ask a particular question.
How many police officers is in the city of Buffalo?
She specifically wanted to know how many police officers are in the city of Buffalo, specifically in the city of Buffalo.
735, according to Commissioner Durenda.
Okay, all right.
Juvenile arrest rates are declining across the country, but disproportionate minority contact rates are increasing. What steps are being taken to reduce DMC? disproportionate minority contact here in our community. Sure. Juvenile arrest rates are declining across the country, but disproportionate minority contact, DMC, are increasing. What steps are being taken to reduce DMCs here in our community?
I think we need to take steps. I think the people in the community, community education is very important. And I do want to make sure I answer your question about self-defense. I was going to make sure I did that when I got up here. I want you to know compliance is very important. When you start to fight with the police, that's when you start with this self-defense. You shouldn't do that because then we're going to run into a problem with the resisting arrest. So no, you cannot defend yourself in the course of being arrested. Okay? Are you fighting with the police? If we need to be specific, are you fighting with us? That was in New York City. We don't... No.
Okay. So, folks, we're gonna get ready to wrap up. We have gone over. We're going to get ready to wrap up. We're going to take a couple more questions. And then we're going to wrap up. Clearly, this is a very passionate topic, and we're going to have to give the community more opportunities to air your concerns and issues. So we will work with the Concerned Clergy Coalition, and we will find other opportunities to do this. What we're going to do before we wrap up with the final couple of questions, we will have the answers that were received tonight placed on the city's website. We will also do a printout of some of the questions and answers that can be distributed for those that don't have access to a computer. So I'm going to have the final. Yes, ma'am. You said you had a problem with the Amherst police?
Are they been being reprimanded for any particular thing? And maybe, I don't know if the U.S. attorney or somebody...
There's a question about the Amherst police, and are they being reprimanded for any behaviors? Can somebody go over to the mother and see what she's asking? Let's. No, we'll come to you, ma'am. Let's get that information. Let me also recognize that we've been joined by City Council President Darius Pridgen.
Mayor, this is something real specific that I'm going to follow up. And I'm gonna talk maybe with the U.S. Attorney's Office. This is a real specific thing.
All right, we're gonna go with the final couple of questions.
What is the policy for officers when dealing with deaf or mentally ill people, people who generally have communication disabilities?
Okay, we are updating our training on dealing with the deaf, the mentally ill and the homeless. A lot of times those go hand in hand. We also have options when we have language barriers. We try to get an interpreter. Our department, we do have some diversity where some of our officers can speak different languages. We also use the language line, especially for the deaf and hearing impaired. So... And some of our officers do know sign language as well, so we try to make sure that we keep them up to date and whatever we can as far as training.
How can we trust and believe that the system is set up for good cops to report bad cops when we have publicly seen good cops thrown under the bus for doing such?
Again,
the good police officers are obligated to stand up and say something. We do not tolerate inappropriate behavior, as we showed in the past.
Okay, folks, this is going to be the final question. But before we get to that final question, I want to have Reverend George Nicholas come up on behalf of the Concerned Clergy Coalition of Western New York to say a few words to you.
Good evening. I'm going to be real brief because I know you guys are all ready to go. But let me just say this. In sitting here and listening, and I'm representing the Concerned Clergy of Western New York, and there's two things that the takeaway that I got. One is there's a lot of information and there's a lot of things that are going on by law enforcement that many in the community, myself included, were not aware of. That brings us to the second point. There is very clearly, not only from those who have, you know, voiced in outbursts, which is, you know, I understand that, but there seems to be a significant communication gap between the community and law enforcement. And so we have to figure out a way. We got to figure out a way to close that communications gap. As pastors, one of the things that we should be able to do is communicate well. So it is our commitment and that we stand before you tonight to say that we will do everything that we can to bridge that communication gap. Because we want to make sure that our community is safer. We want to prevent that which happened in Ferguson and Staten Island from happening here in Western New York. This is the first of an ongoing conversation and dialogue that we're going to have. We're going to put together some other conversations, and one of the things that was really painfully absent from this night's conversation was the voice of our young people. And so we're going to have to create some kind of an environment, some kind of a forum, so that we can hear from some of our young men and some of our young women who, quite honestly, paint a much different picture than what we heard tonight. I'm not saying anybody wasn't being honest. I'm just saying there's a different perspective that we need to hear. The second group that I think we need to hear from is from defense attorneys. And so we want to have a conversation where we have some of those who are defending some in our community, and we want to hear from them so that we can get all the information on the table, not to accuse anybody, not to get anybody, but to make sure that we're operating in complete truths so that we can come to a meaningful solution. I commend all of you tonight for taking the time out of your schedules to be here tonight. You could have been anywhere else. So work with us. Give us a chance. Hold us accountable. Yeah, you got my face. I'm the one up here. So hold me accountable, and we're going to make this thing better. Can you work with us on that? Can we do that? Because the key to this is not necessarily the folks up here. The key is you. And so we want to make sure that we get this thing together. So we're going to get it together, right? We're going to get it together, right? We're going to get this together, right? All right. Thank you so much. Thank you.
So I think after Reverend Nicholas has spoken, we're not going to go forward with any other information other than to say we're going to conclude right now. As you heard Reverend Nicholas say, this is just the beginning of the dialogue. We are committed to work with the Concerned Clergy Coalition and other groups to continue this dialogue and incorporate your concerns, your ideas, your recommendations into how we police going forward. So again, thank you all for taking the time to be here. Thank you for your cooperation. I know that emotions were running high, and we appreciate it. And again, thank you to Mount Olive Baptist Church for hosting us.
Let's thank them.
Thank you and good night.
And let's take advantage of, you have law enforcement, you have experts here. Do not leave here without talking to them. I know we wanted to talk in general, since sometimes we want to be heard. Speak specifically. We have chiefs here. We have law enforcement people here. If you have a particular issue, see.